You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come feel what you need when what you really want inside. You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi, Hotep family. Hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day today. Getting a chance to do all the things you want to do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping, too, that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But, of course, if it is not and it has to get done, it must get done, you will get it done. Yep, you will get it done. Man, I tell you, good day today. Well, every day is a good day. Even if the weather's bad, it's still a good day. Especially if you rise or you just lay there, but conscious. It's a good day. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there'll be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening. Of course, this program, once again, is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all times they're going to give are Eastern times. Monday and Wednesday, this evening from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Our Story with Baba West Johnson out of New Orleans. Our Story, Baba West Johnson out of New Orleans. Then on Thursday, tomorrow, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., Mississippi on the Move, the Black Liberation Movement with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. That's on Thursday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Fridays at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Fridays at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening. Sunday from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m., Pinckney to Pinckney. Activist Reverend Edward Pinckney out of Benton Harbor, Michigan. His program is from 5 to 6 on Sunday. Reverend Edward Pinckney. Following that program will be Time for an Awakening at 7 p.m. with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. The Inya Sisim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Inya Sisim. January 28th. The struggle can make the strongest among us grow weary. We will fight because we must, but our efficiency and effortness must be fed by new thinking and our ability to see a light at the end of the tunnel. Brother Kofi Adeh, that's Brother Errol Roberson, ancestor. It is time for a new vanguard, a new conscious, self-defined, self-determined, a Asafo warrior class
guided by a collective of fearless, seasoned, wise jacknocks. And of course, you know, that's the word we use. We don't use the word mentor. Okay, we don't use that word. And here's why, very succinctly and very quickly. Comes out of the Greek story of the Homer and the Iliad, the Odyssey, where Homer gave his son Telemachus over to mentor, and mentor abused him, sexually abused the boy. So that's why we don't use the word mentor. We use the word jegna. Jegna, individual, and jegnak, plural. It is time for silent reflection followed by quiet, determined, and immediate action. Revolutionary time is not limitless. Whether or not we believe Clarence Mumford's calculation that revolutions have a shelf life of one generation, it is well worth serious consideration. We should know that time is always short for the underdog. It becomes even shorter for the underdog's children when their parents do not do their revolutionary work in giving instruction and guidance and motivation. No, we don't do it. Affirm every day as one of my new conscious, undefeatable vanguard. I act as if it is the last day I have to liberate African people. I say every day as one of a new conscious, undefeatable vanguard. I act as if it is the last day I have to help liberate my people. I say. January 29th. Does not history deny the possibilities of really civilizing and humanizing those who by nature are barbarian? I repeat, does not history deny the possibility of really civilizing and humanizing those who by nature are barbarian? This is Baba Jedi, Shimshu Juhudi, Baba Jake Carruthers, Baba Jedi. There is an African proverb which says, illness of genetic origin cannot be cured. When a particular or peculiar type of thought and behavior is found to exist among a people throughout their existence on this planet, we can see that the roots, trunk, branches, and leaves are all marked with the same peculiar qualities and characteristics of whatever variable is being studied. And we can say that such thought and behavior naturally reflect those people's cultural or genocultural personality. And to be sure, personality traits run in families the same as physical conditions, diseases, and appearances. In fact, science, not limited to the European lab, tells us that these qualities are often too deeply intertwined that distinctions are not always as real as they may seem. The same is true with culture. A culture is a family and cannot exist apart from the group which sustains it. Therefore, significant parts of the cultural framework, the embedded cultural sili, cogently to that individual who make up the people who created a given culture, who evolved as one with it, and who can continue to give it life, all of whom are the same. Those who exist now are not different from their ancestors. Those who exist now are no less than the culmination of all the family members who came before them. They are the living practitioners and defenders of their cultural inheritance. Insanity is congenitally European. Insanity is European. Affirm, I have my ancestors' sanity because we are one. Affirm, I have my ancestors' sanity because we are one. Brothers and sisters, the Inya Sasim of daily revolutionary thought. Brothers and sisters, we're going to talk today about something that's been in the news quite often, especially these last few days since Trump took over. And one of the things that he definitely wants to get rid of is diversity, equity, and inclusion. DEI. Just like they got rid of, you know, everything that
that could have a benefit for us. You know, that's what bothers me about us and our leadership, or lack thereof, to give us the proper guidance, especially because our leadership was given a religion tied to the people who enslaved us. And so therefore, the imagery of that religion, and even if it's Islam, family, yeah, even if it's Islam, even if it's Judaism, or black people say, all of it, if it ain't African, and it ain't, it's not. And so that religion taught us to be docile. That religion taught us to believe that those who did what they did to us, that somehow we can use moral persuasion, and then they'll come to understand how bad. And so we thought that, you know, after our enslavement, we had Reconstruction. We had Reconstruction, last about 10 years. And then there was serious Caucasian backlash, lynchings, segregation, Jim Crow laws, humiliation for decades. So, but let's just say that affirmative action started in 1865. That's right after our captivity. But of course, we know that we're not totally free. Not even an Emancipation Proclamation could do that. And then, of course, the 2.5 more years of work them crackers got out of us in west of the South, when Granger went into Galveston, Texas, and announced, you know, from that balcony. Of course, that started Juneteenth Day, June 19th. So that ended 10 years. We had brothers going into Congress. I think one was a governor in Louisiana for a minute. You know, so there were some things that were happening. But it's all predicated on what Europeans want to happen. Until finally, no, we don't want this to happen. Johnson rescinded all the protections and the government protections and so forth. Andrew Johnson. This is ironic, too, because another Johnson comes along who said something different. And so affirmative action is over. Reconstruction is over. Then all of the things that happened, the deep segregation, the migration that had to happen because of the South was so oppressive, the lynchings. I mean, here I could be a father who sends my son down the road to my sister's house, his auntie's house. She got some greens. I got some soap I just made. I'm going to send her the soap. He's going to bring back the greens so we can have some greens tomorrow to eat. He's just walking down the road. Good young man. Respectful young man. I raised him right. I loved this kid. He's a good man. Gonna be, he's like 15, 16 years old, maybe. Let's say that. Bother nobody. A couple of crackers come along, mess with him, trying to defend himself. They kill him. They cut off his genitals. They hung him. They might have shot his body up for target practice. Killed my boy. I'm waiting at the crib for them greens. They never come. I say, my boy should be back. I go out there trying to find my boy. He never made it. I can't communicate. I ain't got no phone back then. Couldn't communicate with my sister. And she only stayed, let's say, a half a mile. And there's my boy. I find my boy hanging from a tree. Cut him down. Give him a proper burial. That's all you can do. You can't call no authorities to say my boys were murdered. And, you know, and here's the guys that did it. Shit.
30s. That's how it all happened. Turn of the century. There's a European Jew named Ginsberg wrote a book, 100 Years of Lynching. Just like the other Caucasian wrote a book. I don't know if he's a European Jew or not. Slavery by another name. Convict leasing. I'm telling you, why do you think, what family, why do you think I consistently push this idea, and we talked about it last week, of Exodus. We got to get up out of, this is madness. This is insanity. There ain't a damn thing we can do to change the minds of these people. And now they're really showing you, aren't they? Yeah. Donald J. Trump. Donald J. Trump. Yeah, they're showing you real good now, aren't they? Yeah. I tell you. Let me find that piece by my brother. Brother Boykins. I don't think it's there. I don't think it's here. Yeah. He's telling you who Donald Trump is. He's also saying why we should not be performing for them at the inauguration. We shouldn't perform for them at the inauguration. Why? Because of the kind of man that Donald Trump is. The kind of man that Donald Trump is. You know? And yet, we did it. Snoop getting backlash, and Nelly getting backlash. Did they not know who Donald Trump is? Did they not? Yeah, I'm still trying to find that. I apologize. But that's what's going to be happening today. I'm trying to find stuff. Yeah. Man. Keith Boykins talks about in each decade how racist Donald Trump was, from the 70s when he denied people living in his apartment buildings with him and his father, to the 80s at his casinos, and also to the 80s when he wanted to execute those five brothers, the Central Park Five. I mean, it goes on. Trying to find out about Barack Obama's birth certificate so he couldn't be president when he told him the truth about it. I mean, this is who this man is. This is who he is. And because he came back and did
what
he did.
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
Because he came back and did what he did. And what did he do? He lied, because he's a liar. He consistently lied. No, they stole it from me. And people started to believe him, so that even though he did criminal things, he's on record. It's his voice on tape saying to the attorney general here in the state of Georgia, all I need is 11,000 somebody. I mean, telling you, he's done it. And yet, of all these things that have happened, this man was still elected president. And you can't run for president being a felon, but you can get elected being president. Well, apparently you can run for president being a felon. You can't vote. Oh, you can't vote if you're a felon, but you can run for president and you can be elected. There ain't a damn thing this country can say about anything. Justice, righteousness, truth, honor, integrity. It's not in them to elect this man again after what he's done. The arrogance of this man is unconscionable. Yeah. So, getting back to the chronology. The 60s. I guess we were just tired. We was like Fannie Lou Hamer. We were sick and tired of being sick and tired. Although that's not my favorite quote of Fannie Lou Hamer. My favorite quote of Fannie Lou Hamer's, I love it. Never forget where you came from. And always praise the bridges that carried you over. That's a great quote. Never forget who brought you up. Never forget the influences you have. Never forget your family. The bridges that carried you over. It's Fannie Lou Hamer. So the 60s brung in affirmative action. It didn't start in the 60s. It started in the 70s. Through legislation and so forth. It started then. Yeah. DEI. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. You know, these people don't want no diversity. You don't give a damn about diversity. They sure they don't want inclusion. They want what they got. And they want to maintain it. They want to keep it. It is theirs. It is theirs. They want what they got. You know? Yeah. It is theirs. So I'm going to play a few things. Yeah. So this is Joanne Reed. Joanne Reed brings upon a lot of good things. I don't get a chance to watch her that much on the readout on MSNBC, but, you know, here's my sister right here.
So let me begin with a classic quiz show. It was called What's My Line, and it aired on CBS during the late 1950s and early 1960s. Now, the gimmick for the show was for a celebrity panel to try to guess the profession of a mystery guest. The panel for the January 19, 1964 episode included actress Arlene Francis, comedian Steve Allen, columnist Dorothy Kilgallen, known as the voice of Broadway, and Bennett Cerf, the co-founder of Random House Publishing. The host, journalist John Charles Daly, was previously best known as the first national correspondent to report on the Pearl Harbor attack and the death of Franklin D. Roosevelt. The first mystery guest signed in as Jerry Whittington from West River, Maryland.
Is it Miss or Mrs. Whittington?
It's Miss.
Miss Whittington. Where are you from?
West River, Maryland.
West River, Maryland.
Yes.
Well, it's nice to have you with us. Miss Whittington, may I present our panel? Now, would you join me over here, please? And we'll let the audience in the theater and the audience at home know exactly what your line is.
So it turns out President Lyndon Johnson had arranged for Ms. Whittington to appear on the show rather than announce her hiring via press conference. He knew that the hire would be controversial. Geraldine Jerry Whittington was the first black woman to work in a non-domestic job in the White House. She got hired as LBJ's personal secretary when, after the assassination of President Kennedy, the new president wanted a fresh pool of secretaries in the White House. He reportedly saw Ms. Whittington working in another government office and asked his aide, Jack Valenti, to track down her number. Here's part of the phone call recorded by Johnson of him calling Ms. Whittington to offer her the job.
This is Whittington.
Hello.
You. I'm at home. Who's this?
This is the president.
Oh.
What are you doing?
Oh, I think someone's playing with me.
No, you know, I won't talk to you about our work, honey. Where are you at home?
Oh, yes, I am.
Are you busy?
No, I'm not.
Can you come down here immediately?
Oh, I'd be glad to.
Come down. I've got Jack Valenti here, and we want to talk to you about a little reassignment.
Okay, I love that at first she did not believe that it was the president calling. According to his biographers, Johnson specifically wanted to hire a black woman as his personal secretary to send a message to the racist segregationists in his Southern Democratic Party. Hiring her was a nod to diversity, inclusion, and economic opportunity. At the time Ms. Whittington was hired, this is what Johnson's cabinet looked like. Note the many varieties of white guy. That's also what most of the federal workforce looked like, particularly after a previous Democratic president, Woodrow Wilson, formally segregated the civil service in 1913. Wilson and his cabinet exiled black postal workers to the dead letter office, where they couldn't be seen by the public. They created segregated workspaces and even required federal job applicants to affix a photo of themselves to their applications to make it easier to discriminate. Fast forward to LBJ, who after Kennedy's assassination was under pressure from Dr. King and the civil rights movement, was pushing Congress to pass the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Voting Rights Act in 1965, and a 1968 law to open up immigration to people from non-white countries. Jerry Whittington was a message. She was also the first person Johnson told that he was nominating Thurgood Marshall to be the first black Supreme Court justice. She and Justice Marshall happened to have died on the same day in 1993. But here she is, featured inside Jet magazine. But LBJ wasn't done.
You do not take a person who for years has been hobbled by chains and liberate him, bringing up to the starting line of a race, and then say you are free to compete with all the others, and still justly believe that you have been completely fair. Thus, it is not enough just to open the gates of opportunity. All our citizens must have the ability to walk through those gates. And this is the next and the more profound stage of the battle for civil rights. We seek not just freedom, but opportunity. We seek not just legal equity, but human ability. Not just equality as a right and a theory, but equality as a fact and equality as a result.
That was Lyndon Johnson announcing during a June 1965 commencement address at Howard University his plan to take direct aim at economic inequality. In September of that year, he signed Executive Order 11246, which barred discriminatory hiring practices by federal agencies, federal contractors, or subcontractors. And even after it was narrowed to include just the contractors and subcontractors, the order literally changed the federal workforce, as subsequent presidents, Republican and Democrat, continued to enforce it, Bill Clinton in particular. Today, about 19% of federal workers are black in a country that's about 11% black, and about 60% of the federal workforce is white in a population that's about 59% white. Desegregating federal employment literally built the black middle class in states like Virginia, Maryland, and the District of Columbia. Black postal workers became a bedrock of the black middle class nationwide. There have been thousands and thousands of Jerry Whittingtons, which is probably why the civil service is a prime target of the right-wing Heritage Foundation, its Project 2025 playbook, and almost obsessively anti-black figures like Stephen Miller, who seems in many ways to be running the Trump government. If obnoxious performative proclamations like ending the commemoration of Black History Month and MLK Day in federal agencies and no longer teaching about the Tuskegee Airmen in the Naval Academy, which they retracted, are any indication. But if you look deeper into what this second Trump administration is doing, not just the provocative stuff that they're saying, it sure seems like something else is going on. I think to understand it, you first have to realize that federal contracting is the single biggest source of wealth in America. It's a nearly $1 trillion pot of tax money each year spent with private companies. Getting federal contracts is literally how companies and their founders and CEOs become super rich. Think SpaceX, owned by Elon Musk, and Blue Origin, owned by Jeff Bezos, or United Healthcare. All are among the biggest federal contractors in the U.S., though nothing is bigger and eats up more of our tax money than defense contractors. And with Tom Homan and Stephen Miller's twisted kick in the schoolhouse, restaurant, and church doors and drag undocumented people into military planes after demanding their papers, apartheid South Africa-style plan well underway in blue cities like Chicago, Illinois, and Newark, New Jersey, private prison stocks are soaring. They're posed to see a boom in federal contracts with the Trump regime. And Bezos and Elon and Mark Zuckerberg and Peter Thiel and the rest of the tech oligarch bros and Bitcoin bros are surely preparing to belly up to the Trump teat to suck out even more federal contracts, which explains why Elon and fellow tech bro Sam Altman are currently catfighting over the new AI regulations that Trump cacistocracy are cobbling together with executive orders that some eagle-eyed legal journalists have spotted seem to have been written with AI chatbots. The money that's about to flow to Trump's friends and cronies is likely going to make your head spin, all funded by you, the taxpayer, on top of you having to fund the gargantuan additional tax cut Republicans are prepping so the super rich can pay as close to zero in taxes as possible, not to mention you footing the bill on those 25% tariffs on your Colombian coffee and anything that's imported from Mexico, Canada, and Panama. Oh, yeah, and just wait till Trump launches his Putin-style military assault on Greenland and Panama. Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, and the other defense behemoths are going to bathe in contractor cash, which is really super profitable. You know, war is like the most profitable thing. So while you're focused on the terror raids and the firings and the end Black History Month and the fake piety about merit while Trump hires literal TV personalities to run his government, Trump and friends are preparing to pull off what amounts to a giant bank robbery. Guys, they're going to loot the federal government, hand out contracts to their friends who no longer have to worry about hiring Black folks, women, disabled veterans, LGBTQ folks, anybody who might not go along with the scam. Because when you're preparing to start the steal, you know what you don't need hanging around? Witnesses. Like, say, longtime civil servants who make the government run, whether their president is someone they voted for or not. You don't want civil servant witnesses around when you start the steal. Because they might tell. You know who won't tell? Cronies, who got their jobs only because they pledged total personal loyalty to the felon in chief.
Yeah. I'm telling you, girl. Show you right. Show you right. Man.
So in that chronology, we're going to get to DEI in a minute. But in that chronology, it was a good piece, because that piece with Johnson is part of the affirmative action that was initiated and then come to fruition in the 70s, where many American African jobs, many American Africans access jobs, particularly in government, because not a lot of private industry dealt with affirmative action. They felt they can hire whoever they want to. But of course, if they had government contracts, they'd had to adhere to some affirmative action if they had government contracts. And of course, the government was committed to trying to do whatever it thought it could and should. Because they felt that, and as I've always said, that if a tax base, let's say that tax base, that city is 16-25% American African, and the total so-called minorities, let's say it's 40%, and then 40% of the jobs of the fire department, the police department, teachers, not just sanitation workers. You know, I'm driving home from the firehouse one morning. I got off of work, you know, and I'm driving up the street and I pass three firehouses. And not one brother did I see. This is towards the end of my career because they reversed it, you know, they got rid of it. And seen two fire trucks, excuse me, seen two garbage trucks. None but brothers. I was like, "Damn, we can be the garbage man, but we can't be the fireman." Huh? And that's what happened. I think the most on Milwaukee Fire Department we reached, I think, like 150. Today it's about 70. Yeah, yeah. The department downsized. Like when I came on the Milwaukee Fire Department, it was 1,100 man department, 1,100 personnel, let me say it that way. And the affirmative action piece came in
with hiring women for paramedics at her paramedics program. They didn't hire too many women as firefighters initially. They did later. And some of the couple of the paramedic women trained to be firefighters as well. Yeah. Affirmative action. So I got my job. Yeah. I was the second group of American Africans, Latinos, indigenous people, and Asian and so forth. And of course, the Caucasians, you know, they manipulated it. They always have. And there's many stories about that. You know, Irish dude named Walsh claimed that he was indigenous. I mean, he was a Native American. He got on the job. Same thing with an Italian dude who was in my class named Vaccaro. And this and Harris, this cat, he's supposed to be Native American. I bet that mother ain't never been to a powwow because he was straight up racist. Yeah, but of course, you take advantage of it, just like this one dude. I ain't gonna mention his name, but anyway, I met his sister at Kwanzaa. Her and her daughter. She got this real big old fro, and she said, "Oh, my brother's a firefighter." Yeah, who is it? Well, really? Yeah, I call him undercover brother. He's a twin, and his twin, his brother, he was a police officer. They both came under affirmative action, which they keep them down. You know, they both married Caucasian. They passed for Caucasian, you know. But she didn't. She's at Kwanzaa. She got her daughter had a gala on, you know. But yeah. Affirmative action. It ended. And they went back to hiring like they did in the 50s and previous in departments across the country. I can't speak for others. I can probably go to some agencies and get the numbers of other public works job occupations, fire department, police department, other ones that the public pays into the salaries of, which I always felt definitely should reflect cities they serve, the taxes of the people of that city. It's like taxation without representation. You're paying the taxes, you're doing all these things, but yet you're not reflected in the hiring. You're not reflected in the occupations of that city that make it function. So I was always adamant about that. But of course, that's not the way it is. I mean, it's like that all over. So the ending of affirmative action, then they decided like, hey, this is still terrible. We need diversity. We need equity. It should be equal. We need inclusion into these occupations. And so people started talking about, well, you know, who really benefits from diversity, equity, and inclusion? What are the people that, you know, that make diversity, equity, inclusion really happen, and that, and how it can change the dynamics. Once again, family, the once again, family, the numbers aren't there. Let me play this piece by our good brother, Dr. Umar Ifantunde. Dr. Umar Ifantunde.
Did not benefit black people en masse. It benefited a couple of token blacks. And I'm sorry, y'all gonna lose your little token benefits. But DEI did not benefit the masses of African people. Barack Obama is the first president to use the words diversity, equity, and inclusion in his DEI initiative that he signed in August of 2011, mandating that the federal government take steps to diversify, include, and guarantee equity for minorities. But it was all about the rainbow. That law was about immigrants and rainbow gangers. It was not about black people. Yes, you have a few black people who are going to lose some DEI benefits. But we are 42 million And when we add our African immigrant brothers and sisters in, we're about 45, 48. I'm going to round it up because they always suppress our numbers. I'm going to round it up to 50 million Africans in America. Somebody help me understand how Barack Obama's DEI has benefited black people in these past 16 years. Help me understand. Affirmative action was destroyed by George Bush in the opening years of the 21st century. He destroyed it. The Supreme Court destroyed it. Affirmative action has not been a governmental priority since Lyndon Baines Johnson. Affirmative action has been dead. Affirmative action been dead. That's why Barack Obama called it diversity, equity, and inclusion. Why didn't Barack Obama call it affirmative action? Why didn't Barack Obama call it affirmative action? Why didn't Barack Obama call it affirmative action? I'll tell you why Barack Obama didn't call it affirmative action. Barack Obama didn't call it affirmative action because he didn't want it associated with black people. He didn't want it associated with black people. You're fighting for something that was not created to help you. Let me say it again for the kunocracy in the back. You're fighting for something that was not created to help you. Let me say it one more time. You're fighting for something that wasn't created to help you. They are distracting you from your main fights. We should be fighting against mass incarceration. We should be fighting against miseducation. We should be fighting against police genocide. We should be fighting against economic apartheid. We should be fighting against homelessness and gentrification. Not Nelly for performing, not Snoop Dogg, not Black History, and not DEI. DEI did not benefit black people en masse.
And he's correct. Yeah, he's correct. It didn't. Yeah. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we'll talk more about DEI. But before we do that, let me finish the chronology of affirmative action. It was just like Reconstruction, lasted about 10 years. Many challenges to affirmative action, the Bakke decision, many challenges, you know, for school integration. And the Supreme Court at that time was much more liberal than it was today. Today it is very hardcore, very racist. You know, the Supreme Court is 6-3 conservative. Even if Roberts, who claims, you know, to be, somebody help me out, because I'm still surprised how Roberts could jump over all the other previous sitting justices and to be appointed chief justice. But anyway, but he's the chief justice, and sometimes if a decision, he may be more even on the decision, and even to the point of being liberal on the decision, and side with the other three. But that still does not make it anymore. It did at one time, but it's five conservative, serious, with him six, and just three liberal justices. So nothing from the Supreme Court, believe me, nothing from the Supreme Court is going to assist us in any way, you know. Yeah. And so with the ending of affirmative action, many private institutions felt good about it, and they could access government money without, you know, some restrictions and without numbers that they had to show that they were doing this, that, or the other, you know. Yeah. And of course, affirmative action really helped Caucasian women. I just mentioned the fact that in the Milwaukee Fire Department, those women came on, and all those women that came on were Caucasian women that came on the fire department as paramedics at one time. In fact, not one sister came on as a paramedic. All the sisters that came on as firefighters and later became paramedics. And it's like that, from my understanding, in other places. But affirmative action ended within the fire service, and the numbers dropped. As a as an organization of the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters organization, we looked at the numbers from the Labor Department, and we've seen those numbers consistently drop. And definitely diversity, equity, inclusion is not going to do anything in that area either, you know. So, yeah. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, more discussion about this. And you can, of course, join this conversation and tell us how you feel about it by calling 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Yeah, let's get to this music, huh? Okay. All right, hold on, family. I got you. We'll be right back, family.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
say nothing. Maybe let's ride, let's cruise.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Yeah, we ride. Jaheim. Jaheim and Lettucey stay together and we ride, Jaheim and Bunny James. Man, what happened with Jaheim, man? I like that brother. You can find out what happened with Jaheim. I'm talking about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Excuse me, family. And who was it made to benefit? Well, of course, you know, programs over the history have always had us in mind because we were the main advocates. We rioted, we marched, we sat in, we did everything. And still, to no avail. That's what I'm saying, family. Look at the situation, assess it honestly and realistically, and prepare your ass to get up out of here. This is insanity. This is insanity. We need to be independent. We need to be self-determining. We need to liberate ourselves. And we need to be sovereign. What does that mean? It means that nobody, and I mean nobody, speaks for us but us. We do for ourselves. We don't beg nobody for a damn thing. Because what do? When you beg somebody, what do you get? Crumbs. And they take them back from you. Yeah. Brother Irv sends me a lot of good stuff. Here's a good piece.
Around and find out moment is here. a lot of people are looking at the black community thinking that we are the recipients and benefactors of DEI programs and affirmative action programs. And I know affirmative action is no longer, but whenever they hear the term DEI or they hear the term affirmative action, they look to the black community thinking that we are the benefactor. Now, here's some information for you. The number one recipient of DEI are white women. That is according to the U.S. Department of Labor. And others fall under that group, under the minority group, the ethnic minority. Number one recipient under that group are Latino and Hispanic Americans. Number two are Asian Americans. Number three are Native Americans. Number four, individuals with disability. Number five, veterans. Okay? And number six, the LGBTQ plus community. And guess who comes last at receiving DEI benefits? Guess who comes last? That's right. Black Americans. Black people. Let me also say, you can do a Google search and you will see the primary benefactors of DEI programs are not only white women, but white men, white male CEOs. Those are the ones who have benefited the most from DEI initiative programs. The real Efron and...
Yeah. Just like affirmative action. Caucasians were the ones who benefited the most. Yeah. They manipulate it and they make that happen. You know? Yeah. Now, where did I keep that at? Right here. Brother Kwaku sent me this piece. This is Dr. Robin DiAngelo. Yeah. She wrote a book that was, you know, scrutinizing Caucasians very angry at her, you know, exposing white privilege, you know, yeah, exposing how serious it is in terms of what happens within a society dominated by Caucasians and manipulating the situation to make sure that they always benefit. They always come out, regardless. You know, because that's how they are, and that's who they are. Let's be realistic. From a statistical standpoint, they still have, you know, the benefit of all the good jobs, the good paying jobs. And you just heard what Joanne Reed said about what's really happening with this situation. You know, what happened with affirmative action? You had companies who were private, but who accessed the government. And now even more so, who are going to access government contracts, military contracts, private institutions, private individuals. They're going to get more rich. They already rich. They're going to just get more rich. No, there's no diversity, equity, or inclusion. It's a facade. This is Robin DiAngelo. I said she wrote a book on white privilege. Check it out.
So the presidency and vice presidency, 100% white. The U.S. Senate, 91% white. I just have to point out again, the most diverse Congress we've ever had. The House of Representatives, 73% white. The current cabinet, 89% white. The governors, 98% white. Mayors, 88% white. Military advisors, just think about who we go to war with. 100% white. Federal judges, 88% white. Police officers, 80% white. The people who decide which TV shows we see, 93% white. The people who decide which books we read, 90% white. People who decide which news is covered, 85% white. People who decide which music is produced, 95% white. School teachers, 82% white. Full-time college professors, 84% white. Owners of men's pro football teams, 97% white. Owners of men's pro basketball teams, 98% white. The players, 75% black.
Click the link in the bio to get the book.
White Fragility, that's the name of the book. White Fragility. And it is a very apropos and appropriate title, because they're very fragile. They don't want you to talk about it. They don't even want you to mention how they done what they've done, because they know. Yeah, these people, I tell you, man, a lot of hatred, man. And they will continue, especially because of what has happened. Good afternoon. Yes, it is Brother Marcus. How are you, my friend?
I'm hanging in there, brother. I'm hanging in there. Keeping my ear to the ground.
That's right, man. You got to do it so you know when to make that move. All right, Brother Marcus.
Yes, the rumbling is rumbling, you know. You know, this guy here, Trump, you know, if he can't make America great again, if he can't deliver on his promise, we go see these people turn this country out.
Yeah, it's going to be.
That's what's getting ready to happen.
I think so too, dear brother. It's going to get ugly. You know,
it's going to get ugly. Going to get ugly. We have to watch these white folks, you know, because I watch them, put them on in the microscope, and they are at each other's throats. See?
Yeah.
And I just say about this, the rich getting richer.
Yeah.
I was reading an article the other day. They said these people getting $100 million a day, getting richer.
Yeah.
That's the rate. So all that money is being sucked out of the economy. See, you know, I'm in the street a lot. I move around a lot. And I tell you, I see white folks out here doing DoorDash. Now, white folks usually, you know, usually you deliver stuff to them. They don't deliver stuff to you. You see?
Right.
But the condition is that bad. And I mean, ain't no any white folks either. These ain't these ain't the crooked white folks. These are white folks. They look like they got two pennies, driving nice cars and everything. But it's an indication of what's to come. So you are right, Brother Oshi, when you say prepare yourself to get out of here. Get some defense, because the crap is getting ready to hit the fan. When when he can't deliver, when they can't see make America great again, it gonna be some serious problems.
Yeah.
You know, I also saw, you know, because we know that the federal government is the biggest employer of black folks.
That's right.
Right?
Yes, it is.
The federal government.
The federal government, and state government, and county government, and city government. You know, those entities looking for the jobs that we have. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My job as a firefighter was a city job, you know?
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. And you know what he said? He said he get ready to shrink the government. Mm. He get ready to shrink the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And he's proposing he's going to give them a 7 months' worth of salary. 7 months' worth of pay.
That's right. Gone. You're gone. You're off. You're off the pay.
Okay. I really hope our people watching what is taking place. See, you know, these moves he's making, because he's signing them executive orders so fast. Thank you. He's signing them things so fast. Mm-hmm. You don't even know what he's signing. We don't even know.
They just put it before him. Put a pen in his hand, sign this, and then he shows it to him.
I'm telling you, brother, he's signing.
Oh yeah,
telling you. So you right, brother Oshie. You know, Marcus Garvey words come to pass. Hunger pains gonna hit our people fast because we've been sleeping at the wheel, brother. Mm-hmm. We've been sleeping at the wheel, but you know, sometimes I miss you because I'll be on the road.
Okay.
But today I called you and I said, I got to give my brother Oshie.
Well, thank you, my brother. Okay. Thank you, brother Marcus. It's always good to hear from you. I know that you're out there. If you can listen, I know you do. And if you can call in, I know you will. Appreciate you, my brother. Yes. Thank you.
All right, brother Oshie. Thank you.
All right. keep on keeping on, right?
Yes, indeed, my brother. Yes, indeed.
All right. Peace, Brother Marcus. Yeah. Brother Irv, what's up, man? How you doing, my brother?
I'm doing good, Baba Oshie. You know I'm right here. Trying to be a co-pilot to you in case anything happens. You know, I can take the wheel.
That's a good assurance, brother. Makes me feel good. It's a good assurance.
Look, Baba Oshie, Brother Marcus, who is an amazing individual, because I don't hear what Brother Marcus says. I hear what Brother Marcus doesn't say.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel that Brother Marcus is holding back. He said, I'm paraphrasing now. I don't like to do that, but I am. I'm going to paraphrase something that he said. He said one time, there are some good white people. And I said, wow, Brother Marcus. He said, there are some good white people. He said, in the cemetery. and you know, I laughed at that, Baba Oshie. But then I thought about what he said. He was actually telling the truth, because white folks are only, to me, and I don't say they. You notice how we always say, you know, they coming to get us, or they come. Give they a name.
Mm-hmm.
Label they, because whoever controls the media controls the thought. And that's why American Africans don't have media companies. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, I'm not a Roland Martin fan, don't get me wrong, but he says something that makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
We have no black-owned media. We cannot get our word out. We talk amongst ourselves. White folks have a bullhorn. They can say something and it goes around the world.
Right.
You know, and you're absolutely correct about the jobs. I was taught, Baba Oshie, when I grew up, to go to school, get your diploma, and get you a job. Because back then, you could work down at the Sparrow's Point, at the plant. You could work down at the shipyard.
Mm-hmm.
And make a ton of money with a high school diploma.
Sure.
Baba Oshie, them days have gone.
They're not coming back. Yeah.
They're not coming back. And Trump knows that most government jobs are held down by American Africans. And he knows in order to bring the American African down a notch, you just take his job or give him an incentive. Oh, you guys can take this 8 months worth of pay, and we don't need you no more because we're making government smaller. If you're making government smaller, make it small from the top down, not from the bottom up.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? And that's what he's doing. And that's what and you know, Baba Oshie, I'm not going to say this because I know people will get upset about it, but I'm somewhat glad that Donald Trump is putting the screws to American Africans. Because when we are pushed back against the walls, as far as slavery went,
right, we respond.
We stand up. We come together.
Yeah.
We like, and you know, the black guy said, well, more people were married during slavery. You sound like a damn fool. You want to get a job from Trump. But in reality, black people are cohesive when we have something centrally that we can agree on. And the one thing that black people can agree on right now is that we're all African. We all come from African ancestry. I don't give a damn about foundational. I don't care about incarcerational. I don't care about all them big words with the syllables and stuff, you know. But what I'm saying is we have something to rally around. The melanin in our skin. We can rally around the fact that we're African. And if that's what we need to do, then that's what we need to do in order to get in a fighting stance. See, the most American Africans don't even realize there's a fight. They don't even think there's a fight going on. Oh, we doing good. I got to cut eyes. You see, I start saying I. And everything you say, Baba Oshi, is a we and a us. But the American African is an I. You know, I got a car. I got a nice house. You know, I got a nice house in California. And it's burned down now. So now what do you have? What do you have now? But what you
and you ain't,
are,
and you ain't got no insurance.
Ain't got no insurance. Ain't got enough insurance.
Yeah.
But what you still are, and you're gonna die, is you're American African. You were born African. You're gonna die African.
Mm-hmm.
With a car, without a car. You came here with nothing. But we need to get out of this I mentality. We need to get out of this right now, I need it mentality, and start plant the seeds for our children's children's children. Because that's how this Irugu thinks.
Mm-hmm.
George Washington had money, but he was thinking about 100 years down the road how this is going to look. And look how it looks. It looks like we look when white folks got a cold, black people got pneumonia. If you think this, when you start seeing white people get upset with white people, we should have been upset. By the time I knew what was going on, I didn't know. I'm not, don't get me wrong, I don't know everything. But I smelled this boy Trump out the gate 8 years ago. I smelled him when he put that ad in the paper about them brothers that supposed to rape that girl and never put an apology in it. Because he stinks. He smells of racism. He smells of white supremacy.
He reeks of it.
Come on now, stay
listen,
with me.
Here,
don't
how
leave.
About, let
stay
me,
with
let me.
Me.
You sent me this, so let me. Give this to the listening audience, you know.
Please, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm gonna give this to the listening audience, brother. You know, he sends me a lot of good stuff. Yeah, let me find that right quick. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah,
that'll
tell
work.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, it's coming. Yeah, it's good.
Man, I love it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh!
I tell you, you know, and it's a good piece. This is here he is. This is Keith Boykins, and Keith Boykins is talking about where is that at?
Take your time.
About Donald Trump, you know.
Okay.
And how okay. Trump is through the decades. Like I said, I've checked out Trump way back
mm-hmm.
back, man, when Donald Trump.
Way back in the Don King days.
Yeah.
You know, in the Oprah Winfrey days.
Yep.
In the Carl Weinstein days.
Yeah.
The Epstein days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back when they thought Donald Trump was a real businessman, he's a failed businessman.
Yeah,
and he surrounds himself with failed businessmen. I don't think he's the only one. There's a ton of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but this is where we are.
This is where we are.
How's that integration? How's that integration working out for you?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought. How's that working out for you? You know. Yeah. We all going. When we gonna grab hands together and start singing old Negro spirituals?
Mm-hmm.
When we gonna? Lord Jesus. When we gonna do that?
Yeah,
when's that happen? Because what's that doing for you right now?
Right, and even if that, how has that benefited us? You know, we've been praying.
Mm.
We've been meditating. We've been doing all of these things for long. But yet our condition continues to get worse.
It's worse.
Not about that. The fact of the matter is that we failed to deal with the reality of it. We failed to deal with these people straight up.
Correct.
You know, and that's what the real deal is. That's
we live in the fantasy of freedom. We live in a dream of freedom. Like King said, I have a dream. Mm-hmm. Well, he woke up to a nightmare because we, for some reason, we think white folks is just going to just give us. Mm-hmm. Like the lady said on TV, when we got out, when we were given our emancipation, can't nobody give you your emancipation? Mm-hmm. Can't nobody give you your manhood?
Right.
You were born with that. That is an inalienable right. In other words, that's in you. You don't need nobody to tell you, I appreciate you freeing me. Mm-hmm. You're the one that tried to enslave me. It doesn't make sense.
No, and we say to ourselves, help us make sense of this madness. No, there is no help. It doesn't make sense. It's insane.
I heard the girl who's the press secretary now trying to explain this to, and she would say one lie after another, trying to explain what this 2025 thing that Trump is putting in place right now. But that's what this is.
Mm-hmm.
You can look in 2025 document,
sure,
and everything he's doing is in there. He's following it to a T because he's about as dumb as a box of crayons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's not about what he's showing you. It's what he's not showing
you. Yeah.
We want to latch our wagon on to everybody else because we're still afraid as a people to walk by ourselves. I'm not scared to walk by myself. I'm not afraid to stand up and say, no, I want all of us Africans in here.
Mm-hmm.
So we could have a meeting first. Just like the Jew. I don't go in the synagogue. I grew up right next to a synagogue. Never been in there. Never.
Because
they don't want my black ass in there. For what?
Yeah.
We speak another language. We got our own language. We speak Hebrew. Can you speak Hebrew? See, we as American Africans, we speak English. And I'm not an Englishman.
Mm-hmm.
That works. How that work?
That's the language that has been imposed upon you. And that is the language that they want you to speak to them in, you know.
That's correct.
In fact, they don't want you to have a language of your own. That's why when Brother Rick would call and talk about, you know, developing a language that we could speak and have cultural privacy in, that's why I've always advocated that we should learn Kiswahili as a mass.
That's right.
I mean, it's not like they can't learn it too, but they won't know it. You know, that's the problem when they go to other places, particularly like in Japan or in Chinese. That's why, because of the emergence of China, and China is an economic entity, serious entity, that people learn to speak Mandarin Chinese just from a business standpoint,
right.
You know? So, yeah, man.
No, you're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct, Baba Oshi. And we have to realize as a people, that we're in a fight. And that's the biggest thing. As long as you don't know you in jail, you'll never try to escape, Baba Oshi.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even have to put a lock on the door. You'll never leave.
Right.
You don't even know you're in jail. I gave you some crumbs that fell. I see, Baba Oshi, the reason I'm talking so fast and I'm so passionate about this is because I, like a fool, watched Django last night. The D is
Django.
Django.
Yeah.
And that movie had so many messages in it.
For sure.
It's so many messages about racism, white supremacy. The one that put this together, it was just interesting
Tarantino. That's Quentin Tarantino. Who's that nigga on that nag?
Come on now. On that nag. We're going to have to burn the sheets and the baby. And I said, who writes this? Did you make this up, or is this how white folks actually treated us?
Yeah.
And they don't make this up. This is the history of them.
It's who they are. It's who they are, man.
Man, that was deep, bro. I'm telling you. And you know, I know Baba Oshi, when I hear, if you hear another American African, so-called American African, holler, I can't believe Trump did that. Yeah. If you say that's just your colonization me. Showing, your colonized mind is showing. You're talking about a people who hung your people, ripped babies out of stomachs, molested your children, your ancestors, and you can't believe that they would do this? Wait a minute. Wait, that's because you don't know your history.
Mm-hmm.
That Donald Trump is peanuts compared to the evil and the demonic things that American Africans, that our white folks did to American Africans.
Mm-hmm.
He's nothing compared to the things that the Pope authorized to be done. The Queen authorized genocide all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So nah, Baba Oshie, read a little bit.
Well, let me,
you don't have to read. Look at YouTube. Yeah. You got funnies for the dummies. You can look at the pictures.
You can't get the word. Hope you get the message, right?
You can get it.
Let me play this right quick. Okay.
Go ahead, brother.
But this is Donald Trump over a period of time.
Dishonor to the black community.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at Donald Trump, the man who would refuse to rent to black people in the 1970s, who tried to lead a lynch mob against five black and brown kids in the 1980s for the Central Park case, who refused to allow black casino workers to have a prominent place in his casinos in Atlantic City in the 1990s, who spent 5.5 years lying about Barack Obama's birth certificate in the 2000s, who came into office and then attacked black people like Colin Kaepernick, who attacked Ruby Freeman and her daughter Shay Moss for simply doing their jobs as Fulton County election workers. You dishonor those people when you go and perform for this man who has done nothing but dishonor black people. And just even last year, he was calling Haitian immigrants, accusing them of eating cats and dogs. This is not somebody that black people should be associated with and pretending to normalize. We should be challenging him. And it dishonors the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., whose birthday we honor on Monday to celebrate this man.
Mm. Sure.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump he's in history, a nutshell.
Like I said, you know, when I first saw him, I never forget it, man. Well, I forget. Obviously, I forget because I don't remember which program it was on. Either it was Sally Jaffe Raphael or it was Ricky Lake or it was probably Phil Donahue. It's probably Phil Donahue. But I know I remember seeing him on Oprah a few times. And in fact, she's the one that put into his mind, you would run for president. Are you going to run for president? And of course, he said that line that if I did run for president, I'd run as a Republican because they stupid. You know,
exactly what he said.
It is that they were stupid, and they are. You know, it's just that the manipulation of the Republicans, you know, that they do what they do in terms of the people who have the money. You know, the big time Republicans, the ones who changed the dynamic when Ronald Reagan came in. You know,
correct.
And then, of course,
correct.
Lost out, and then came back with Bush, the old dude, and Bush the younger idiot. You know, so I mean, telling you, you know, to me, all of them is all pretty. You know, I don't make a distinction between a Democrat or Republican. It's just this, just a different wing of the same filthy, funky bird. You know, got a lot of callers. Let me get a couple of callers here, Irv, okay?
Yeah, go ahead, brother.
Thank you, brother. Please do. All right. I'll just go down the line here. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Baba Ochi. How are you today?
I'm doing well, dear brother. How are you, man? What's happening, Paul?
I'm alive and kicking, and giving thanks for life. Great conversation by our big brother Irv, and I'm so pleased to hear my big brother Marcos.
Yeah,
Wagwan, brother Marcos.
Yeah, brother Everything Marcos, Chris. Man. It's always good to hear his voice, see man. There. Yeah.
See it there. But hear what now, Baba Ochi. You know, a lot of the things you said in the beginning of the show is completely profound and on point. I think the brother, is it Anderson? Claude Anderson speaks a lot about this. I've heard him over the years.
Yes.
Make a references to some of the points you raised, and I think he also wrote a book on it. You know, on those sort of things, and you know, obviously it has a lot of substance. But like Brother Irv and Brother Marcus has referred to, are the people really paying attention? That's always been my problem. You know, is it really? I mean, the amount of books which have been read and the amount of studies people have contributed to, are the people really paying attention? Now I wonder if they really care. You know what I mean? I mean, I came to the conclusion a long time ago. You see, I know the kind of conversations, you're in America there, so obviously your conversations is based there. I have family there. I have family in the Caribbean. I live in England. I have family from Africa as well. So my grounding is, I have to always say this, is like of a worldview, because what I identify is similar patterns of behavior. And I don't recognize, like, because you're in a certain place, you're in America, that pattern of behavior is unique to you, because I see the same patterns of behavior right here where I live. And these people ain't been to America.
Right.
You always say exactly right. The same patterns of behavior, the same kind of failure to pay attention to work people have sacrificed their life to. These are people who look like them, people who have done the work and they don't pay attention. Mm-hmm. So it's very difficult to me to keep, it's very, very difficult to me to point fingers and say, oh, it's the white man, it's this and that. Because if your people are sacrificing their life to give you the work, are dedicating 10 and 15 years to write books for you, and you can't even bother to pick up the work, please, I can't accept it's the white man. You have to look at yourself and wonder, why aren't you paying attention? Maybe because you're so distracted by all the television, the soap operas, the entertainment, the smoking, the drinking, and all the rest of the nonsense they've given you to distract you. So it's very, very difficult for me to buy into the concept that it's the white man. I don't see this white man as supreme. I don't see this white man as my God. I don't see him, all these things which we're trying to direct us to accept. I can't accept that.
Okay.
He's just a man like me. He's just a man. He have to go toilet like me. He have to die like me. Everything he has to do, like, so how is he this supreme thing? No, to me, in my book, we have allowed a lot of these things to happen through our own negligence, for our own lack of paying attention. I think Brother Marcus says he says he's directing it to the people he lives around him, asleep at the wheel. Well, I know that's happening. I see it every day, asleep at the damn wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just mind-boggling to me, mind-boggling. You know, we got access to information on our phones. On our phones, you can just touch anything.
That's right.
Look, AI, AI chatbot. I sent you the link, and I pulled up some information on yourself. Didn't I do that?
Mm-hmm.
You remember,
right,
yeah?
Right. Yes.
So what? I was trying to explain there, and I did that purposely because I just wanted to know how much information that thing had, and it was able to get information on you, wasn't it?
Right. Oh no. Yeah.
Right. And I find that quite extraordinary myself. Right. I know the information was going back some time, and I realized that it was over a year, so it didn't have current information. But the reality, what I'm trying to tell
still
you,
it's there,
Baba Ochi.
Yeah.
You. The point I'm trying to make to you is this. Yeah. You can actually go on AI and anything you want to learn, you just type it in and ask it, and it just tells you. Look, man, God, man, it's just mind-blowing. Anything you want to know. You see, we're talking about working for the devil and sucking on this white man's lollipop and all this nonsense, yeah? When anything you want, these children, right? Let me tell you something. If we get ourselves together, they don't even have to go to school. I'm telling you that as fact. Anything you want to know, you know, calm down, Paul, calm down. So about a year ago, I saw an Indian. He's got a company, yeah? And I saw he made a statement. He made a statement. He said, the technology for AI, soon your phone will be able to process it. And I thought, wow, your phone. Because in my head, I'm looking at the power consumption to process information, and that was large. That's what these tricksters tried to convince us. But he said, no, in 2 years, it's going to be on your phone. He said, you'll be able to speak in your phone, and your phone will be able to talk to you. Anything in the world you want to know, just be able to instruct you, talk to you like an absolute expert. And I said, wow. This Chinese technology, all they've done really, they've copied the programs and they've just reintroduced. That's what the Chinese do. They take your information, they copy it and reproduce it at a cheaper cost because they've got the manpower,
right?
And they've got the resources, so they can do that very easily. Yeah. So what I'm saying is, right now, by next year, you'll be able to just talk to these phones like you see on Star Trek. You just say anything and it will just tell you. Now, what I can't get is how come we ain't picked up on that? How come we ain't just... We now... I don't know where we're at. It's really mind-boggling. We're just so dependent on this white man. This white man has convinced us that we need him for everything, and we don't. Look, we are asleep at the wheel. And you can't argue with that. We're just asleep.
But one thing you said, Brother Paul, that, you know, that we depend on him because he made us dependent. The crux of the problem, the root of the problem, is and why we are not self-determining, liberated, sovereign, doing for ourselves, doing with each other, having respect for ourselves and respect for our women, respect for family, is because of what they have consistently thrown at us, bombarded us with, you know? And a lot of times we are at each other's throat. We blame ourselves. You know, it's like a puppeteer. You know, he's dangling the strings, but we don't see the puppeteer. You know, we don't see, as Minister Louis Farrakhan used to say, the hidden hand, you know. But we behave and we do things in a way that are detrimental to us. And of course, you know, when we look at our situation, our family situation, our marital situation, our children and so forth, the job situation. I mean, here I've been talking about the evolution of us coming out of our captivity to a reconstruction period, which lasts about 10 years, then an affirmative action which lasted about 10 years, and they're pushing this diversity, equity, and inclusion. Y'all don't talk about that in the UK, do you? Diversity, equity, and inclusion.
We got different labels for it.
Yeah,
different
I'm
names,
quite sure.
But
different
labels.
Yeah.
We do. But it's not, you know, we use Americanisms, obviously, yeah, sometimes to back up the arguments, but we got different labels for them. It's the same thing, though.
Yeah.
Like I say, it's the same thing.
Sure.
Same
sure.
thing. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, but let me just say this to you.
Sure.
Last thing I want to say to you, Baba Olchi. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about, yeah? You brought on a man who's pulling water out the ear, yeah? It's not a new concept, but what he's done, he's taken his initiative, yeah? And he's produced something in real time. It's not just speculation. It's not just theorizing. It's not just a hypothesis. He's produced it in real time. Now, right? Can you afford to throw away $52? Can you afford to lose that $52?
No. Point blank, no.
All
I
right.
can't
afford okay.
to die.
Right. Now, sometimes I ain't got no money. I'm telling you, sometimes I've been in a situation I ain't got no money. But my mindset is this. I can give him $52. I can give him that. I can give him that now. Right? I can give him that. Now, what I'm saying is, 1,000 people give him $52. That's a £52,000. Now, it's a really sad predicament if we cannot know our people to even afford to lose that. Because the point I'm trying to make to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's something visible. Here's something tangible. Here's somebody who has sacrificed something for not just ours, for humankind purpose, and it's real, right? Mm-hmm. But yet we can't come together to just give him a dollar. It's, even if you consider $1 for each week, that's $52 for the year. That's why I said 52, right?
Right, sure.
Well, if we can't do that, then to me, we have to seriously look ourselves in the mirror. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, seriously, because there's something serious wrong going on with us. Seriously wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen people with no home, even on the street, with more money than that. I'm telling you, who get welfare and they've got more. You see their shoes or you see the clothes they wear. I'm telling you, man. Mm-hmm. So I ain't really convinced. But the truth of the matter, what I'm saying is, it comes down to the mindset. It's the mindset where we're going wrong.
That's it. You're right.
And yeah, obviously this man's had an influence on our mind. But look, in this day and age, with so much access to information, where you can see so clearly what needs to be done, you know what? I can't see how we can keep making these excuses and think that we got any future making these excuses. I can't see that. Maybe I've got it all wrong, but I don't know.
I hear you, Paul.
I just think we need to really come up with something.
I hear you, brother. Let me catch some other callers. Just stay with me, Paul. Thank you, bro. Peace. Hey, my brother, how you doing?
Good morning, Bubba Oshi. How are you?
I'm good. It's good. It was good to see you this past weekend at the ASCAC conference, man. Really was.
Oh, same here.
Yeah, it's good same to see here. You, Ted Lusk. Yes, sir.
As a matter of fact, I'm recovering from that. I didn't really realize how cold it had gotten in Columbus, right?
Now, yeah.
Man, I was out for the count Sunday and some of Monday, so I'm slowly but surely recovering and getting back on my feet. But it was a pleasure to see you and Bubba Kwaku. And what was the sister?
My lady Anne. Yes.
Anne. Okay, yeah. It was a pleasure to see her and meet her up front and personal, and also to be able to come in close quarters with some people I have also talked with before.
Yeah.
For example, Bernie Galvin.
Yeah.
And say, my
South
goodness,
Carolina.
Times I've talked with him.
Yeah.
I finally get a chance to meet him.
Sure.
And of course, with other people I've met before. Namely, Chikwe Kua. I met him a long time ago in Selma here, so it was a pleasure seeing him again. I love the conference. I love the ambiance.
Yeah.
I was able to talk with different people, especially with Dr. Kelsey herself and also Dr. Hood. Mm-hmm. And again, these are names, but now I can fit faces to names.
Right on. Yes,
and
sir.
And so it just broadened my horizons. It was a pleasure. I'm just sorry I wasn't able to meet with everyone on Sunday at the gravesite, but that's okay. That's okay. There will be time.
Right
and
on.
So it was great seeing you guys. And again, trying to keep this experience as well as the energy, Bubba, here in Montgomery, Alabama. It's much needed, I think. And so it's just a matter of rolling up the sleeves. Hey, I have done that and ready to work. And we'll be doing that and continue to doing that. So, yes.
All right, dear brother. Appreciate it, man. Good to see you and always good to hear from you. And I appreciate you always listening and calling in, man. All right, dear
Very
brother.
Very good. Apani Anigufu. Peace and power, brother. Have a good one.
Peace. Good afternoon.
Oshi, what's popping, my brother? What's popping?
How you doing, Jack?
Is everything good by you, my good brother?
Everything is everything. Go ahead.
All right. You know, just sitting back, observing and watching what's going on, looking at, you know, things that are happening and, you know, the moves that are being made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a dangerous thing when a man signs important legislation that they don't read, and then try to place themselves in a position to where, because you perceive to have a stronghold or something, or people in place to just push it through, what you're doing is setting yourself up for major failure, and in the process, the hurt of a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, this psychopath, he's really under the impression that the Supreme Court is going to give him everything that he wished for, which they may. But in the process, what he's going to do is maybe cause a revolution in this country that will basically maybe destroy it, which, well, you know, I could give a,
I could give a rat's ass about what happens
with
this country.
I could care less.
My bottom line concern is what happens with African people here throughout the diaspora and African people on the continent. It's my main concern, and my whole hope and prayer is that based upon all the things that are happening in Western society and what these folks have done, that we get our thing together, that we begin to communicate, close ranks and pull our resources, go home and do things for ourselves. It's not going to happen here, Jay. This is not the place for us.
No, I don't expect it to. Mm-mm. I don't expect it to happen here. I expect, or I would hope, that we will have another run like we had in the late 80s to around the mid 90s. Because what's happening is you have a situation to whereas, you know, you have this Baba Louie, who I refer to, the Latino, that may wake up and realize that they're being niggerized or treated like we have been treated, and maybe they'll get their African spirit back in their bodies and remove that European pus
but it was some ICE cats leading this Latino who had a hard hat, and he had a support Trump T-shirt on.
Yeah. So the thing is, maybe he'll realize or they'll realize, because, you know, like I know, a lot of them now are having buyer's remorse.
Yeah.
You know, even though the Negro, for some reason, feels as though the Democratic Party did him so bad, which in reality, the party could have done better. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, what this white boy is going to do is just going to be devastating to whatever we perceive ourselves to have the position. Now, let me show you the game. And the good thing is that they had, I think, a senator or congressman go on the floor and state that, you know, Trump is saying that he wants people to resign, government workers to resign, and he's going to give them 7 months service, severance or whatever. But the congressman or the senator, whoever the hell he was, went and got on the floor and said, don't fall for that shit, because he's going to treat you the same way that he treated his workers when he was in private. He was a private citizen. And the reality is, he doesn't have no authority to do these things, just like he had no authority to do what he did on Monday. Right. And the court had to shut it down, which, you know, what he's looking for is to get it to the Supreme Court, with the hopes of the Supreme Court going along with it. But I think the Supreme Court understands that if they go along with it, that it's just going to devastate the country. And, you know, I would hope they would be intelligent enough to not do that and to at least keep him under some reins, even though they've gave the sick bastard carte blanche to just think that he's a god or a dictator or whatever the hell his fantasy is. Yeah. So, I mean, listen, okay. The bottom line is, what are we as African people going to do?
That's it, brother. That's the bottom line.
That's what the key is. Are we going to figure out how to come together and work with one another to survive this crisis? Now, I know you was at the ASCAP conference this weekend. I would love to hear what is their agenda for this crisis, because I spoke with Dr. Carr this morning on his show. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, hey, you know, to be honest with you, I don't think they got a real plan on how to move forward other than their illusion that they're going to be able to turn this shit around in 2026. I say, as a betting man, that by that time, I think the type of damage that he's done, there may not even be an election.
Yeah, well, who knows?
Well, let me take another caller.
Yeah, glad to take someone else.
All right, and because I only got a couple more minutes left, Jay.
Yes, my brother.
Man. All right, talk to you in a minute, brother. Peace.
All right, my brother.
Okay. Well, let me get back. Oh, okay. Is this Brother Paul?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you've come back to me, Baba Ochi. Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, go ahead, man.
Well, I haven't got a lot to say, Baba Ochi. I always appreciate your work, and I appreciate all the callers. I really do, man. Mm-hmm. You know, but for me, you know, Marcus Garvey said, unless we wake up, we're going to die, man. And that's the reality of it, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the reality of it. So for me, Big Brother Irv said, yeah, a lot of us don't even know we're in the fight. And a lot of us don't even know we're backed against the wall. Now, that's what you're doing. You're waking us up. That's what
that's
time for awakening is.
That's it.
Yeah? But the truth of the matter is, are the people paying attention? I keep asking myself that. And if they're not paying attention, we have to go to plan B. You know, I'm going to say something very controversial here. Look, you know, if you recognize you're over attack, I come from a martial art background, right? You get in a stance. That's the first thing they teach you in martial art. You get in a stance.
Right.
That means you stand in a position
ready
to
fight.
Defend yourself.
Ready
if you
to
stand
fight.
Square
yes.
and you get clapped on the chin, you're going to get knocked out, okay? So you stand in a position. We don't even know how to get into that position. So it's our duty. I say that. What I mean is that SOS, you know, this ain't the time for this nice talk. Oh, you know what I mean? Art skin and all that. This ain't not that time again. Yeah. This is a time this is the grow up time. This is the grow up time when you have to tell people you do it or else. And that sounds crazy. But if you're going to survive these next 10, 15 years, what else have you got? What options have you got? That's how real it is. It's so real.
That's right.
And it's scary.
I agree with
as
you,
well.
Paul.
Baba Ochi, it's very scary how zombified a lot of us are. It's scary. It's very scary. You know, because you can wake a man up who's sleeping, but what do you do with a zombie? I mean, if you watch a zombie movie, the only thing you can do with a zombie is terminate him. That's the last thing I say. Thank you.
All right, Brother Paul. Brother Irv.
Baba Ochi, can you hear me?
I sure can.
Baba Ochi, I know there's only 2 minutes left, but my God, we as a people have to be, we don't have to be anything, but I would love for my people to be more optimistic about the future of African people. In Burkina Faso, they're making gold bars now. I hear that they're making an electric car. They have a passport. There is an upside to this. It's not all doom and gloom. Let's be perfectly clear. if this is the best that Donald Trump has against black people, then you got to come better than this. Because my people have gone through empires, and we're still here. Mm. Come on now, Oshi. We've been through empires. I mean,
Not only have we been through them, but we've created empires. You know, we were the first... creator of empires. People came to some from far and wide to sit at our feet to learn.
And this
how
is
to
all you
society.
Got. This ain't nothing. This ain't nothing. And we will bring the people who are not awake, we will drag them brothers with us.
Yep.
Because the reality is we're not losing our mind. I'm not jumping out of a window because I don't have no money. I didn't have no money when I got here. So Baba Ochi, we got this.
We got this.
We
buddy.
Got this, and we're
All
getting
right.
better with it.
All right.
Come on, brother. Go ahead and end the show, big brother.
Right.
Thank you
Peace.
So much, Ocean.
Okay. Jay, you got the last word, man. What's the last word for today, brother? Okay, he ain't got it. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, that they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahadie. BB for Hardy means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious.
You have a blessed and wonderful day, family. See you on Friday. All right.